Hey, what's up? It's Mario. Final Approach, round two with Pat Pitt and the Viking podcast for Final Approach, and we're going to go through a couple things today. Guys that keep us going and partner with us all year on the YouTube series on The Last Pass, that was season four, so we're on five. We're working hard, so we're working hard on it now. And obviously, we have Last Strut too with turkey season coming up, so lots of stuff going on, but whether it be Federal, Loophole, Rogers Sporting Goods, Sass Goose Company, all partner with us to do stuff so we can travel and hopefully you guys learn something and gals, like hopefully you learn something, hopefully you get something out of this. But we were talking in the first part and we just hit mentors and I want to talk about that because it's a huge thing. And then I want to talk about Pat being on Field and Stream's like top 25 waterfowlers and we'll get to that. But let's start mentors. You said it. Let's start with you. You said, did you have a mentor to
no.
get? Okay.
No.
So you're in Iceland. You're there at the time. You're living there, right?
Yeah.
And then what? What does it?
Well, what actually does it is well, my brother goose hunted a bit and ptarmigan hunted.
Okay.
Dad didn't, you know.
Okay.
So, but, you know, he took me hunting and he would just go to the farm and bullshit with the farmer
and let
me go. Okay. So, but there was no mentority in it.
Okay.
So it was just
nobody
grooming
you.
I didn't know anyone that was, you know, actively hunting. So I started reading magazines and, you know, ordered VHS videos from the States and, you know, then that turned into DVD. So,
right.
In 88, when I get my driver's license, I still don't have a firearms license at that time because we can't shoot or hunt until we're 20.
Okay, so you gotta wait 2 more years.
We gotta wait. So I get a driver's license and I ask my dad, can you buy a shotgun for me? Because he had a firearms license. And he's like, yeah. So he went out, we went somewhere, picked out a shotgun. I remember it was in a Remington 870 Express.
Of course it was.
And
everybody had one.
I remember it rushed it in the car going on our first trip. So he bought me the gun and, you know, it pretty much started like that. And it was goose hunting mainly, you know, hunting in fields. It was easy to get access to fields, you know, farmers wanted them out of their fields.
That's right.
And it was mainly grass. You know, at that time, barley is...
wasn't a big thing.
No, they hardly had started growing it. So it just... one thing led to the other, and then I got hooked up with a cool group of guys that were, you know, more actively hunting. But no one wanted to hunt ducks unless they were just sitting in a goose field,
and ducks
came. And a duck flew by, or they would see a duck in a ditch and they would walk down there and try to jump it and shoot it. But I actually ordered and bought decoys, a duck call. I don't have that call today. I know. And it's probably less than 15 years, and I was just going through some shit in my garage or my storage room at that time, and I just, I'm never going to use that again. And I threw all that stuff out.
Yeah.
So, well, that's just one. And that was a Roy Rhodes.
Oh, my God. Come circle back, right?
Yeah.
It's a Roy Rhodes.
Yeah, I've got one on my lanyard now that I'm hunting with.
Yeah. So, and it took me a long time to figure this thing out because I didn't have access to information. And guys are like, you just shoot your duck in the goose field,
right,
flying over. And I'm like, no, I want to do it like this. So DVDs and video, you know, DVDs, VHSs, magazines.
That was your mentor.
Those were my mentors. So, but then it's like, it just turned into an addiction.
Yeah, that happens, I think.
Yeah.
I ain't a cure for it either.
No, I'm glad. I'm glad. Well,
yeah, I'm going to take it up serious one of these days.
Yeah. Stop half-assing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Pat? So who?
Well, it actually started out with my mom's brothers on my uncle's on Thanksgiving Day. We always cooked enough food to feed a third world country, but all the men would go out and rabbit hunt that morning.
Okay.
And I got to tag along and carry the rabbits.
Hey.
Yeah, little did I know, but me and I had a couple of cousins about the same age, and we got to be the rabbit carriers. I mean, that was great. And I thought, well, this is really cool, watching the beagles and whatnot.
That's right.
Hunting without a dog, gosh, it's a sin.
Yeah, know, it's a waste of time.
Forever on
for
that.
For sure.
But when I got into Boy Scouts, my scoutmaster, there was his son and two others were all about the same age. And he'd take us rabbit hunting. And there again, for some reason, we were the ones that went through the biggest, roughest briar tangles. But he did take us all to Wyoming one year to shoot mule deer and antelope. And this was back in the 60s. '60s.
Wow. I would carry some rabbits for that.
Oh, shoot.
Oh, yeah. Great. All of them.
I mean, I wouldn't. And my family doctor was a bird hunter. And he got me interested. He took me quail hunting. And I thought, here's this big brown and white dog running around. All of a sudden, he stops.
Dead, right.
And we walk up and quail get up. Well, this is amazing. How did he know how to do that? So, you know, it just fed the fire. And I moved to Memphis, and I killed my first ducks in 63.
Okay.
That was where my first job was sacking groceries, and a couple of the guys there, their fathers took them duck hunting, and they let me tag along. You know, put me in a slough with some rubber galoshes and garbage bags taped to my knees, and
right.
Freezing cold, and I killed a mallard. And that just started it right then. And
oh,
but when I moved to Memphis in 71, I met Dr. Chubby Andrews, who was Nash Buckingham's good friend. And they hunted together all the time. And I didn't know Dr. Chubb from Adam's house cat.
Right.
But my next door neighbor at the apartment, she was engaged to his nephew. And she told me, she said, yeah, he's got a bunch of ducks mounted and whatnot. And I got the phone book out and found his address, walked up, knocked on the door. You know, hey, you don't know me, but I'd like to see all your stuff. And he not only invited me in and took me on a tour of his trophy room, but, you know, I sat down and ate dinner with him.
He was probably tickled.
Oh, I was just on cloud nine.
Well, I know you were on cloud nine, but I'm saying, I bet you he was tickled, like, yeah, I'll do it.
Well, I mean,
I want to show it all to you.
Dr. Andrews called everybody's son. I mean, he was, gosh, they broke the mold when they made him. I mean, he was a gifted surgeon. He was a par golfer. He played racquetball and tennis. And I'd at least one day a week, we'd go sit in his basement and mount a duck. He's the one that got me started taxidermy.
Right.
All right. So we'd mount a duck. And, you know, one day I saw this goose that, like, gee, that looks like new money. And he said, yeah, I killed that in Alaska. That's an emperor goose. Well, boy, that just added kindling to the fire right then. So, you know, I was already planning trips. I was spending money that I didn't have.
Sure.
All right. But Thursday was his day off. Every Thursday and Saturday, I'd go to Beaver Dam with him to hunt. And likely as not, he'd be doing surgery the day before, whatnot, and he had a big Lincoln Continental, and I'd drive us all the way down to Tunica, to Beaver Dam.
Right.
And we'd hunt that morning, stop at the Blue and White and eat breakfast, and come back home. And every Thursday and Saturday for, gosh, 15 years or more, maybe longer, I'd have to go look my log books to find out.
That's
but,
crazy.
We'd go down there and hunt. And
you hunted with Nash when you would go down there, or just
no,
with
I
the doc?
I moved to Memphis the year Mr. Buck died.
Okay.
I never got to meet him. But I've got his Nilo Kennel hat pin that Dr. Chubb gave me. And, you know, I feel like when we, John Olin gave Nash Buckingham bullets, okay?
Right.
And when Mr. Buck died, Dr. Andrews got the last case. It may not have been a completely full case. It's a 20-box case now.
Right.
Of 3-inch, 1 3/8 Lubloy 4s that you could shoot down a airplane with those things. And so but he had
I can see
Dr. Andrews had gotten Bohoop 2 when Mr. Buck passed away.
Right.
And so we shot that last case of ammo through Bullwhoop 2 at Beaver Dam. I mean, hunting.
Just taking turns.
Taking turns. Oh, just passing gun back and forth. And
explain Bullwhoop if people don't know what that is.
Well, Bullwhoop, the original Bullwhoop 1, and I was with Doc the day that he got the phone call that they had thought they had found that gun. All right, that's another story.
Right.
Both of them are at DU now.
Right.
Bullwhoop was a side-by-side with Burt Becker barrels, who was probably the forerunner of all these finely tuned barrels, chokes, and all that.
Right.
Parker gun. And I'm not going to say it pointed like a rail fence to me. I mean, you know, it full and full, didn't have no safety on it. Mr. Buck didn't want safety, so we'd sit there with the gun
open,
broke down, and you know, ducks would work,
close it.
And every time we'd be in the be big cypresses around Round Pond at Beaver Dam or Doc's pool or whatever, and we'd get a mallard that would cruise that timber, and he'd get up on top of those trees maybe for the second time, and Doc would say, well, go ahead and try it. And that thing was almost like it had guided missile technology. You'd crush a bird up there at 40, 50 yards, and I mean, it was dead. I don't mean, you know.
Graveyard.
I don't mean, you know, pull up like a brick. 2 liter. I mean, it's dead. And Doc would say, you know, Mr. Buck's hand guided that shot. And
That's cool.
That just tickled me to death. And
I know that gun weighed a lot.
Oh, gosh. I'm going to say it's 10, 12 pounds. And it's like
swinging a water pipe.
Well, it's like swinging something with concrete blocks on it. But once you got that thing going, you weren't going to stop your swing.
No.
Just
it was
kept
all
going through.
But, you know, and I can't remember all the ducks I killed with it, but I can remember the memory of
killing them
of that
with that gun.
Of that gun with Doc, and it just.
Oh my God!
I was with him the day he died. Gail, my wife, sat on the edge of the bed and ate some ice cream with him the day he died when he was struggling for breath and whatnot. And
how old was he when he died?
Gosh, I can't remember that.
In his 70s or 80s?
Yeah, he probably in his 80s, early 80s. The last hunt I had with him at Beaver Dam, we sat in a blind they called Giddens Blind up on right off Ramp Road on the north end of the lake. I don't know if we loaded our guns or not, but we never picked them up. We just sat there and talked. You know, you'd like interrupt a conversation. There's a pair of gray ducks. Yeah. One of my best memories of Doc was just, he had an Alumacraft ducker, okay? Double-ended, you know, and we'd be hunting like Doc's pool. There'd be four or five of us up there and had a blind on each side of the pool, depending on which way the wind was.
Right.
We'd hunt that blind because we were smart, you know.
Hey.
You always want an advantage. You want the sun and the wind behind your back.
There's no doubt.
You had it figured out.
But Doc would say, come on, son, let's jump shoot down the west side. And we'd pull that ducker out from behind the blind, and he'd sit on a milk crate up front of it. And this is, it's almost like a layout boat. I don't know if people are familiar with them or not, but right. there's one at DU headquarters. And I'd sit on the little back deck, you know, and paddle.
Right.
And jump shoot birds down. We're on point system then too.
Right.
A lot of gadwalls, a lot of widgeon. Of course, mallards, blacks, everything else was on that lake. And then divers out on the open water. The lake was just surrounded with buckbrush, button willows, and sawgrass. And there was a pocket down there just about opposite the boat landing on the west side called a Ussery Pocket. And my last hunt at Beaver Dam was in that pocket, okay? But as we'd get close to the pocket, there was a little trail up through the sawgrass, and you know, Doc says, son, don't hit the side of the boat with that paddle. So he's just back. We could hear the ducks in there just hammering.
Just thick.
And I'd get to the edge of the pocket and I'd make one more push and then kick a boat sideways and take a paddle and go bam against the side. And ducks would come up, their ancestors would be coming up from the from the butt, bro. We would rain ducks, and one day we got in there and Doc had two ducks dead in the air before he was shooting an A5 Browning then. He also shot a Merkel over and under. But,
oh yeah.
But wow. Doc had two ducks dying before I cleared leather because I had to put the paddle down.
Right.
And sometimes I just threw it out in the water. But, you know, mallards and all kinds of stuff coming up. And you'd always get sleepers coming out, you know. That
were late.
You could peel off.
Well, those were the smart ducks. Say, well, they're out of ammo now. I'm going to get. Of course, we were loading back as fast as we could. And now Doc couldn't swim. Keep that in mind.
Okay.
But anyway, we hit that pocket and killed 5-6 ducks just right off the bat, and then we were picking sleepers out. And a black duck came out from, I'm a right-handed shooter, a black duck came out from my right side and was going, they had to climb to get out of the cypress trees. Well, I stood up and turned around and shot that black duck. And of course, Doc was like, son, and that's about the only time he ever really got mad at me. And I kept saying, but Doc, it was a black duck. He said, you almost turned a boat, but Doc, it was a black duck. And he said, you know what? Good shot. So, he didn't stay mad long. Bless his heart. We fished down there and turkey hunted. And
yep.
It just had, gosh, so many memories. There's not a opening weekend goes by that I don't think of him.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Taught you right.
Yeah, he was, like I say, he was one of a kind.
Was he a conservationist?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, he'd say, that's what limits you in place for.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay.
Right.
And we'd work ducks into the pocket or the pool or the round pond or whatever. Yep. And, you know, he'd say, shoot the green.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, you know, he did so much. And of course, DU has both the bow hoops now.
Right.
I've mounted some, when Field and Stream did the article about bow hoop coming back, and the guys got to shoot it down there, Mike Boyd and Lamar Boyd and several of the other.
Right.
DU. Upper echelon. I got to mount two dead mounts for Mike and somebody else. They even killed a speck down there that day. But anyway, bow whoop. So I got my hand in it anyway.
Hey, you're touching it. You're part of that history. That's cool.
Yeah. Well, Steven works for DU and he's got to clean it.
Yeah, he's got to clean it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's a pretty good honor right there, you know.
Well, yeah. I mean, I haven't got to pick up bow whoop one, but I've picked up bow whoop two a bunch of times.
That's right.
But you have an invitation on bow whoop one.
Well.
You're waiting on that.
I'm waiting on it because I mounted a duck for the guy that can pull the trigger, so to speak, on that.
And let you in on that.
Well, I'd like to say I've shot both of them.
For sure. Well, I don't know anybody that shot one of them, I only know you. That's it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well.
And no one who shot both of them.
Yeah, that would be.
So.
That would be something that I would really, really, you know, bucket list,
That'd
I guess. That
would be special, for sure. Yeah.
But, you know, it's, duck hunting has gone from being a heritage to being a sideshow.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's not up to us, you know what I mean? But it's up to guys who are hardcore at it, respect the resource, do all that kind of stuff. It's up to us to, you know, push the narrative. I'm not saying we gotta teach everybody or do anything, and I'm not going to get on a soapbox, but you know, you talk about the younger generation and kids just piling birds up and doing stuff like that. You know, I guess I'm okay with some of that if in turn you're in a Delta Waterfowl chapter, you're in a Ducks Unlimited chapter, you're in an organization in your state, you know, whether it's CWA in California or, you know, how Michigan Waterfowlers, like whatever it is, like I'm okay to a certain extent if you're giving back what you're taking or you're giving back more or whatever, just being involved. Because, you know, and listen, if you're in your 20s or 30s or whatever now, like if you don't start doing stuff now to help, what is it going to be like in 20 years for you, that of sport that you love so much? Like you have to do something.
Well, when some of these 20-year-old kids get to be my age,
right?
They're going to look back and realize the mistakes they've made, like I have.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And a lot of stuff I've done in the past, I'm not really proud of, but I've been trying to put back more than I took out,
sure,
which is kind of difficult at times. But well, that's why. I was recruited by Dave Hall, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and the Poachers to Preachers, and
right,
we did talks with the Flyway Council and the biologists and whatnot, and
for sure,
you know, just trying to make amends, I guess, because everybody grows up with a wild streak. I mean, sure, back then, I mean, game laws were just a suggestion, and I'm not proud of it, but
right. But you talk about it.
Well, if I can convince one kid to not shoot blue-winged teal in April or whatever.
Right.
But it's...
Just because it's wrong.
Well, it is that.
Not that it's illegal, just because it's wrong.
It's wrong. And I worry about my grandkids' future as far as waterfowl hunting goes.
Sure.
They're never going to see what I've seen. When I started, it was a three-duck limit, one mallard or one black duck.
Right.
One wood duck. Cans were closed. Yep. I can't remember about redheads, but we had better shooting back then. I'm talking like, I guess that's why we did some of the things we did, because it was never ending.
Right.
I mean, it's just, gosh, look at all these ducks, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly, and bought the hat and the t-shirt. So,
I get it. I mean, that's you know, that's part of growing up and part of learning and having a mentor or having somebody step in or learning stuff. And that's why we're talking about this stuff. So,
yeah,
you know, so people can look at that and say, you know, or just make them think for a minute, like, okay, I guess you're right. Like, look down the road a little bit, because you can't just kill them all and expect them to just be there.
We all look back, seems like something every day or every week will happen that, you know, my father told me that, and I didn't believe him then, but.
Yeah, yeah. But it was true.
But he was right.
Right.
So.
That's life.
It is. It goes full circle.
Yeah, life lessons for sure.
You know, if I'd have listened to my dad about some things, I wouldn't, you know.
That would have been one time you wouldn't have to say sorry.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry.
Well, that, but you can't keep taking and not start giving.
That's right. That's right.
So,
I agree.
Whether you're sitting out there freezing your butt off and you've killed one little green-winged teal or something and a hen mallard comes in, that's where you think, do I want to take her out of the
right, the
population or not? And I don't care what biologists say, I do not give a red letter damn about what they say. A dead hen is never going to lay another egg. It's
for sure.
Impossible.
For sure.
So, and you know, you can do the equation on imprinted hens. 99, 2000, when the Robo Ducks came up,
mm-hmm,
and I've got another name for them that I won't mention on.
I remember it well.
Well, we lost 40% of our super hens, because the hens in the younger year are the most susceptible.
In a season.
In a season.
40%.
And a super hen is one that's imprinted on the prairie here and returns every year with her brood. And their brood returns with their brood and their brood. You do a bell curve plus or minus 3 sigma units and you're looking at a god-awful number of birds. And I don't care how you paste it up on your mind, a dead one's not gonna lay another egg, and you don't need, I don't know anybody that needs a duck to subsist on.
Not anymore, no.
No, not anymore.
No.
And
no one's
but there's
starving.
so many that well if I kill this hen, that'll give me my limit.
Yeah.
You know? Go home wanting, from, you know.
That one bird isn't going to do it for you. Like, just leave it.
Well, they get on social media. I got my limit, right. You know. And they got 2 hen mallards and a hen pintail.
Right.
And, I mean, just.
Well, and it goes back to laughing at the guy who's got a picture of 2 birds or whatever. Yeah. You know
well,
what I mean?
I mean,
like, because
you're
he didn't
get,
shoot his limit. Really?
Come you're going to get ridiculed and criticized no matter what you do.
Correct.
Because there's always.
No matter if you shoot 70. Or one.
Yeah, because there's always somebody that's either holier than thou or stupider than you are.
They're called keyboard warriors.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of people live for that. You know, who can I gig today?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's a few.
Cyber technology has been a ruination of a lot of duck hunting.
Well, more than that, just life in general.
Well, it is. Yeah, it is that.
It's
but
everything.
I mean. The internet, you know, the robo ducks, half the duck hunters that we're talking to have never hunted a season that wasn't a liberal season.
Yeah.
At least half, maybe more.
Remember the good old days.
Yeah.
3 ducks in 30 days.
And I start talking to some 20-year-old kid about, yeah, well, back when we did this and we did that, and they don't want to hear it. I mean,
well, they don't
know
it. They just know what's now, like what they're in, like, and I can understand that. But you got, if you don't, history will repeat itself if you just keep doing the same stuff. Like
exactly.
You will see it again.
Exactly.
So would you like to reduce the limit?
I'd like to go to. Oh, we've come up with all kinds of good theories. You know, Chris Haken and I have talked about it, and I'd like to see 40 and 4. With
40 and 4.
4 mallards. We came up with a great way to do it. You know, have in the Fish and Wildlife, U.S. Fish and Wildlife won't let you do it because you can only have 2 splits. But like to have 4-day weekend, and get your 60 days or 40 days that way. It'll take some of the pressure off these birds.
Mm-hmm.
The birds are pressured. Here, we have an early spec season down here, okay? When the gunfire starts, and I talked to Max Sharp that owns Straight Lake down here, that's, you know, one of the Valhallas of duckdom.
Right.
He said when all this shooting starts in October, he said the ducks don't know that they're not being shot at.
They get nervous.
But they get nervous and they all gravitate to these big rest areas. And that starts their nucleus of holding all the birds.
They start imprinting that.
Well, it's like Clint Eastwood said, you got to adapt, you got to overcome. You know, we're dealing with something with a brain the size of a peanut.
Correct.
That can outthink us in a lot of time. I mean, it makes us look stupid.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, but.
But if you want to go like those 40 days and 4 and 4-day weekends, you know, Friday through Monday, to relieve the pressure of the birds, what do you think is going to happen with all the goose hunting? It needs to coexist.
Exactly.
It needs to be the same.
Well, Arkansas,
or it doesn't work.
Arkansas got halfway smart this year, the Game and Fish Commission. They shut down the goose hunting during the splits. Okay,
so then it's a true rest period
they went
for
from
everything.
They went from like a 16-day 3-spec limit to 9 days.
Okay.
We had spec season running up within 3 or 4 days of duck season.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, you know, the ducks were just terrified.
They were already
nocturnal.
Right.
Yep.
But people got to make a living, but a lot of this goose hunting is really, really stressing these birds out, I think. Texas, God bless Texas, they've stopped the conservation season. They don't have it anymore.
Yep.
And somewhere out there, somebody is thinking, you know, we're pressuring not only the geese, but every other thing that migrates up and through here.
Everything. Yeah.
Just driving back from Grubbs yesterday.
Yeah.
Day before yesterday, I counted, just on this stretch of road, 10 goosebreads, snow goosebreads.
Yeah.
10.
Yeah.
They're getting ready.
There's one right here across the street.
Mm-hmm. And it's not even close to season yet.
No, it's not even close to the season. So just on this stretch of road. So there's probably hundreds of goosebreads, you know, just in their surrounding counties.
Well, they're going to get, as soon as, you know, Friday's the last day of the season. That's tomorrow. Starting Saturday, they're going to be able to snow goose hunt with 10, 15, 20, 30 people out there in the spreads.
Mm-hmm.
And what do we got coming? The following weekend is youth weekend. All the birds are going to be shook up. All the ducks are going to be shook up.
Yeah, for kids.
Because the goose hunting is going to continue.
Yeah.
And it's not working. It's not putting a dent in the population.
No, it's not doing what it's supposed to do.
God put a dent in the population with flu. Bird flu.
That's right.
We picked up in that one field y'all hunted with me the first day. We picked up over 200 dead snows, blues, and we're seeing more specks now, too.
Well, yeah, it's Mother Nature is doing what she's supposed to do.
Well, just like the lemmings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they're overpopulated. It's all run the ocean drown. Okay? Yeah.
It is handling itself, for sure.
Yeah.
It is trying to handle itself. Yes. We are in its way.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of this studies that I've seen about the, you know, the Save the Tundra and whatnot, you know, the areas that they're documenting all this on, they hadn't spread out in the other areas.
Right.
Hey, Telly. Huh? Well, let's do this. We're going to talk about, let's do a third segment. We'll do a third segment because we want to talk about the Field and Stream article. We're going to talk about that.
Dogs.
We talk about that. Figured I'd say it too. So my grandfather hunted. So my mentors were my grandfather who hunted, and they hunted rabbits and deer. And my grandfather wasn't a waterfowl hunter. Now my dad, on the other hand, my dad never hunted until he met my mom and her dad. Then my dad started hunting. Then my dad was into rabbits. Then my dad got the pheasant bug. My dad had the pheasant bug forever. That was his thing. But duck hunting was probably his close second. And I remember going in Pennsylvania. I remember sitting on a log on, they called it, it was Reservoir 8. And we would go to 8, number 8 they called it. We'd go there, it was a huge reservoir, put decoys out, watch my dad and the dog. And then that was it for me. The dog and just the water.
Yeah,
got to be by the water, and I got to have the dog. Like, that's it for me. That's my thing. So if it's not for them, I don't do it. And then my dad ends up starting we were in high school. My dad ends up starting a Ducks Unlimited chapter because there wasn't one. So then he starts that. So then we get into that. So the whole, you know, so at least I had people, you know, kind of guiding me through. And then, you know, I hunt all my life, and then I get into the industry, which is, you know, totally, you know, submerged, you know, so, and I guided for a while and did all that. Like, so I've done it all, but I still have not lost love for the experience and the tradition and everything that has to offer.
Well, most of the good traditions are grassroots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
I still have that.
Well, you either grew up with it or you adopted it.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, then we're gonna cut. We're going to go to a different segment. Appreciate everybody listening to this and watching this. And we'll have another one up because this is too good. This is like just too much information. So hit us up, fabrand.com, if you want to go there. Take a look at our partners if you want to, looking for anything like Federal Ammunition or Weatherby or Loophole or Rogers Sporting Goods that has everything that you need and don't need. And you can hide it from your loved ones and your wife and your spouse, because you bought too much that we do that all. So we appreciate you guys checking out. We'll come back with another episode here with Final Approach.